Gambia, West Africa, is relatively small. It has a population less than 2 million people. If you could give me the bird's eye view, the social, political, and economic situation in Gambia.
The Gambia is the smallest country in Africa. That's saying a lot because the U.S. can fit into Africa three times. That's how huge Africa is. And so this is the smallest country with 1.5 million people. Even though it's that small, we have about 20 different tribes in the Gambia, 20 different ethnic groups with their own languages that are more different than English and French. So these are not dialects of each other, but separate languages. We have a government, a democratic government. It was a military takeover in 94, and then we've had civilian elections since then. The school system, the Gambia is 90% Muslim, but most of our educational system is made up of Christian schooling. So a lot of Gambians, it's not unusual for them to tell you that they went to Catholic schools or in my case, for example, I went to a Baptist kindergarten, a Methodist elementary school, and a Catholic high school. And so an example that's not too far from the U.S. is Christmas. So Christmas holidays and Christmas celebrations are very big in the Gambia. And so a lot of the Muslim families, a lot of the Muslim kids will go to church with their Christian classmates, for example, to celebrate it. So it's not divided religiously like Westerners are prone to thinking about religious divisions. So the basic thing about the Gambia is its friendliness. We don't have any gold, diamond, oil, elements, natural resources that make people fight a lot. We have our human resources, and we're on the westernmost coast of Africa. Therefore, it's a tourist attraction. So we, our biggest industry other than agriculture is tourism.
And your description of Gambia sounds picturesque, and it sounds pretty nice to see the intermingling of religious cultures there. But there's obviously a problem with educating girls, or you wouldn't have Starfish International.
Right.
So what has prompted the need for your services among Gambian girls?
Well, when I give presentations in the U.S., I generally talk about education and educating girls from the perspective of the parents instead of the onlooker, for example. So the average Gambian makes about a dollar a day. So if they worked every day of their life, they would make, during the year, $365. Education is free at the primary level, but at the secondary level, basic school fees for example, the high school, St. Peter's, in the village that we work with, cost about $100. So if a parent has four kids, if they wanted to just educate one child, one-third of their annual salary would go towards educating that one child. So it's not that parents don't want to educate their girls. It's usually that they have to pick a child or two to educate because they are just not making enough to educate all the children. And they normally pick the boys because the idea is that the girl gets married and moves away from the family to the family she's married into. And the boy gets married and brings their wife into the home. So the parents usually think, let's invest into this family instead of educating somebody and sending them to another family. So that's why they pick the boys. And then we're left with a majority of girls who get primary education, but their parents cannot afford to educate them at the secondary level. And those are the girls that we take and pay for their school fees and help educate them.
So it's not necessarily a deliberate persecution of girls within the country, but it's the parents thinking that they're choosing the lesser of two evils in their decision to educate their boys over their girls.
Right. And what we're doing at Starfish is we're taking the girls. So these are high-achieving girls with high financial need. And we say to the parents, we'll raise funds to pay for the school fees of these girls. And in return, we want you to give them some time off from their chores so that we can put them through an enrichment program. And one of the things that that enrichment program does is help the girl start their own small business starting in seventh grade. So we work with seventh through 12th graders. And once the girl gets into the program, she has to start her own small business so that even though she's not paying for her own school fees, she starts paying for her school uniform, her backpack, some of her books, her shoes, her transportation back and forth, and her lunch money. And what that does is it creates an example of how much a girl can do if given an opportunity. So she's not a burden to the family anymore, because from seventh grade, she starts providing these things, and it kind of expands the parents' imagination as to what is possible. If this girl can do all this for herself between seventh and ninth grade, how much more can she do between ninth and 12th grade, and if I allow her to go to college?
What are community members saying about the program, because you're trying to change some of the views with their cultural norms?
Well, we're involved in things that directly empower the community. It's not something that they have to imagine. It's something that they can see. And that's very hard to argue with. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have a photography class. So 15 of our girls run their own small business photography. We have soap making, body lotion making, lip balm making. We have a beekeeping class. We have embroidery. We have tie-dyeing. And right now we have a class that's starting to learn about basic cell phone repair. And so if you think about those, mm-hmm. those are all things that people need within the village or within their community. We also, because we do maternal health, we do basic first aid and CPR. We do basic human resource development and community health. For example, malaria, HIV, peer health education, those sorts of topics that we discuss. It's really easy for the community when they need something. Let's say somebody's bleeding profusely, you're trying to get to the community clinic. If there's a starfish girl around, they can stem the flow of blood before you get there. And so these are things people can see, and that's hard to argue with. But we also educate them about how the education of a girl can help within the family to raise, and within the community to raise the community. So the analogy we use is two wings of a bird, which whether you're literate or illiterate, you can understand. And that is, if the family or the community is the bird, one wing is the male wing and the other wing is the female wing. If you want the bird to soar as high as it can, then you don't just have one strong wing. You want both wings to be strong enough. And right now, the female wing is weaker. So you want to strengthen it so your family can reach the heights that it should reach.
So considering that many of your practitioners are volunteer, or most, if not all, are, what are the funding needs of Starfish International? What keeps you going?
We started out in 2008. My mother-in-law, David's mom, had breast cancer. And I had shaved off my head in solidarity with... shaved off my hair in solidarity with her, and people started treating me like I had cancer. and so at some point, I started thinking, what if it were me? What if I had been the one going through cancer, breast cancer? What would I regret not having done in my life? And what I would have regretted not having done was gone back to my community to follow up on my dream of working with girls. So what we did was emailed everybody on our email list, and we said, look, if you go out to eat, let's say, once a week and you spend $25, if you give up four meals at a restaurant, you could sponsor a girl for a year. And so about 50 of our friends signed on to sponsor a girl for a year, and it was between $100 and $150. And we, with that, we went and we got the girls. So funding needs, we still do the same thing. Every year we come and we look for people who would want to sponsor individual girls. So funding needs range from classroom space. We borrow classroom space from the local high school that I went to, that these girls are going to. It ranges from school fees for the girls. We educate 100 girls every year, so that's $10,000, to hoping to raise funds to build a building. So the girls can just sit in there and have their classes there. We're now in the process of building a business center so the girls can sell all their wares in one central location rather than dividing it and each selling them individually. So if you go to the website, starfishinternational.org, or you look us up on Facebook, you can see all the projects that the girls are doing and where we need help. We have no government funding right now, and we're not big enough. We just started, so we're not big enough to apply for huge grants. Mm-hmm. And so it's just individually based.
And this is this how you and David make your living as well? I mean, do you how do you stay afloat personally?
That's a good question. Until this year, I was teaching at Syracuse University. I had an assistantship there, and I was doing my PhD. I've finished all the coursework, and I'm writing the dissertation. So until then, our money was coming from David as a clinical psychologist. So he was working as a clinical psychologist, and I was working as a teacher. And then this year, now that I've finished my coursework, we want to do Starfish full time. So this year, we just have to get the word out and work really hard and hope people invest in Starfish, and then Starfish could hopefully pay us.
Well, Yasin Sarr with Starfish International, Berea College alumna and Murray State University alumna, thank you very much for your time and your visit here at WKMS.
Thank you for having me. Go to our Facebook page. I've learned that it's good to be liked. So go there, starfishinternational.org, and like us and see what projects the girls are doing and where you can plug in, and let us know your passion and sponsor a girl.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much.